Welcome to the Southern Nevada Community Health Center Governing Board meeting on the 27th of February. We'll go ahead and call this meeting to order, make sure that we're present with a quorum and have complied with the Nevada Open Meeting Law.
Here.
All right, thank you. If you'll all stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you very much. We'll go to item number 3 on our agenda today, which is public comment. This is an opportunity for individuals that would like to speak on posted agenda items. If you would like to step forward and speak and state your name for the record so we can become familiar with who you are, now is your time. Seeing no one for public comment, we'll close that portion of the meeting and move on to item number 4, adoption of the February 27th agenda.
Move to approve.
Second.
We have a motion from Councilman Knutson and a second from Commissioner Kirkpatrick. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The agenda is approved. Now we'll go to item number 5, the consent agenda, which consists of 2 items. Are there any questions about the consent agenda? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes. We'll go to item number 6. The fun part, report, discussion, and action. Number 1 under item number 6, receive report, discuss, and approve CHC scope of services, discounted fee program, and corresponding fee schedule. We have a presentation on that. Mr. Alfred? This is the correct presentation about it. It's what's relative to FQHC, what's what the services
are. So how can we adopt it without the board adopting it first?
This would be adopted and then recommended to the board. You can listen to that from a procedural standpoint.
Okay.
Hey, Alfred.
Hi. Good afternoon, board. There's a handout in front of you. It kind of looks like this. It has HRSA on the front of it. This we'll discuss this piece at the end of the presentation. This presentation is a comparison of fee schedule and the sliding fee schedule. It's kind of a continuation from the Board of Health conversation last week, but we wanted to pare it down that specifically to the FQHC. So general information, what is a fee schedule? So the fee schedule is a list of charges for healthcare services that are determined on prevailing rates in the local market. Insurance providers also publish a list that represent the maximum they will reimburse for the same services. And so that is why we request and create a fee schedule. So how do we and why do we need a fee schedule? So a fee schedule is needed so the insurance companies know that we will be charging patients for, or what we will be charging patients for services they will be reimbursing us for. So in many instances, the reimbursement offered by the insurance company is less than the fee schedule created by the health care providers. So essentially what happens is the insurance companies will typically reimburse us at a lower rate than what we have announced in our fee schedule. So this is a similar screen to what was delivered last week from our CFO. So how do we calculate our fee schedule here at the health district and at the community health center? So the costs. The health district expenses to fund a certain services, which includes the labor, which is the salary, taxes, and any fringe benefits, the product, which can be the vaccines, the medications, any supplies that are associated with that, so cotton balls, syringes, gloves, and then also clinical overhead. So clinical services and laboratory administrative costs, and then the overhead multiplier. So currently it's at 26.61%, and typically depending on what industry you're in, this may be called overhead, it may be called indirect costs, it may be called administrative costs, but for where we are and where our administrative costs or indirect costs or multiplier came from, which was at 33% several years ago, we're trending in the right direction to get that cost down. So based on the current cost allocations as prepared by the associates that we have as a third party to prepare that and review by the Board of Health Board and Fiscal Committee each year. So our fee schedule, the maximum amount that the health district will charge for that service. So that is how we calculate our fee schedule. Fees are based on methods according to cost, insurance reimbursement rates, service experience, and or the 7% fee increase for certain procedures as dictated by CMS for this year. So we're going to move over to the sliding fee discount program, not to be confused with the fee schedule. So the sliding fee discount program is a discount program that we have here at the district and in the health center that is based on a family's income in comparison to the federal poverty guidelines. The discount is given based on the pricing from the original fee schedule. Okay, and I have examples of how that looks with real life patients that have come through the health center. So why do we need a sliding fee discount program? The schedule is needed to be able to ensure that those clients who are in need of services such as dental, sexual health testing, family planning, Ryan White, immunizations, and primary care can obtain these services at a minimum cost. So this is our fee, this is our sliding fee schedule. This should not be new to the board. It may be new to our new members, but this is our current sliding fee scale or schedule. So if you see across the left-hand side, you have provider visit, lab visit, level, family, and so forth. Across the top is the actual fee for where they fall. So let's say that we have a person that comes into the clinic, and let's say that they make between $32,751 to $39,300, and they are coming in for, let's say, new patient. So a provider visit. That person would, after going through and completing the discount program application, we determine that that's where they fall with their income. They would be classified as a P4, a P2, and their fee, their cost of share would be $40 for their provider visit on that. Again, depending on their situation, and then whenever we look into the actual cases that we have, it'll make much more sense than that. But this is the fee schedule that we currently have. From 0 to 3 is what HRSA requires us. 4 is also just Title 10 only. As you see, our nominal fees at the zero level, $20 to $10, and then also our lab fees that are associated with that. So the scale is based on household income, number of people supported by the income. If a client has no income or is homeless, then a self-declaration is filled out as proof. So these clients are considered a P0 and referred to an eligibility specialist or worker for further assistance. Okay, so this is a real patient of the health center. So this is the declaration and the portion of the income information that we take at the front desk to determine where they would fall in the discount program. So if you see, based on this patient's income that was provided, the patient is a P0, which they would pay the office visit at $20 based off of the previous scale. So they have a monthly income of $518. So that meets the threshold within that level to be a P0. However, This patient, the same patient, this is their actual record after they had been seen. So remember last week, we were talking about, okay, when charges are dropped. When a patient comes into the clinic, there is a charge at the front, depending on why they're there. But then after they go through and receive services, that bill may increase, depending on what happened in the back. And then we won't know that until the charges are dropped. Meaning, when I say charges are dropped, that means that whenever the provider is done seeing the patient, has completed the record, and then the charges actually dropped to the actual record. So, the services that this real-life patient received equaled a total of $155. Now, if this patient was insured, this amount would have been sent to the insurance company for reimbursement. Okay? We probably would not have been reimbursed at $155. We would have been reimbursed probably anywhere from 40 to 60% of that. However, this client was referred to an eligibility worker because in their paperwork, they said that they were unemployed. So that prompted our administration staff to say, okay, well, there's other circumstances that is going on with this patient. Let's see what we can do for them. So we sent them to an eligibility worker. They requested a hardship. It was approved. That $20 that they owed at the front is now adjusted due to the approval of the hardship, and the client owed $0. If they are still in the clinic after they gave us the $20, we refund them on the spot. If they have exited the clinic at that, we refund them through the mail. Okay. Next client. This particular client has a job. Hourly rate of pay is $32. Number of hours per week that they work is 36 hours. There is one person that is supported by this income. So this person, after reviewing our sliding fee scale, fell to a P4. They slid to a P4. So based on the income information provided, that's where the slide slid, so to speak. So they would pay $50 for an office visit. Again, this is that person's actual record after the charges had been dropped. Again, all personal information in these records have been redacted. We're only showing the non-personal information for these patients. The services provided equaled a total of $155 again. If this patient was insured, of course, this amount would have been sent to the insurance company for reimbursement. The client only paid $50 out of the $155 cost for the service provided. That was their cost of share because they were uninsured. So their cost of share was only what they slid to as the P4 of $50. Any questions? All right. The last example. This particular patient's income provided, it slid to a P3. They would pay for the office visit at $50. So, because the amount of their total weekly income is $400. And only one person is supported by that income. This is the disposition of that. The services provided equaled $155. This patient was insured. This patient, again, if they were insured, it would have went to the insurance company. We would have been reimbursed. Client only paid $20, and the client now has a $30 balance. So they paid the $20 up front. We send them a bill for the $30. What questions can I answer for you about the presentation, or do we want to go directly into the handout?
No, they can. Pardon me. They can still come back, even though there's the. I mean, so they owe the money; they haven't paid it yet. They can still come back in for services and rack up more.
Absolutely.
It's okay. Right.
Absolutely.
What happens if, when they go to check in, they don't have $20 up front?
So if they do not have $20 up front and they are on a slide, we actually, again, depending on their circumstances, we can dive deeper. We can look into hardship. We can look at whatever avenues we have at our eligibility worker level. But usually what will happen is that we will bill that directly to the patient's account. If they are uninsured at the end of the year, and forgive me, I think it's, is it 18 months? 18 months, we write those charges off. You're welcome.
How much verification goes into it? Are we running social? How do we know if they're lying, if they're telling the truth, if they're looking for free service, if they're, what's the parameters there? What are we looking at?
So, good question. There are eligibility requirements and there are materials that they must meet. So they have to bring in proof of income. They can do self-declaration, but they can only do that once a year.
Okay.
They can have attestation. So say, for instance, if no one's working, but they're living with a friend or a parent, the parent can attest to their living situation, but they have to bring in, it's a requirement, proof of income, proof of residency, those particular pieces.
And if they don't, if they can't, they sign that declaration?
So. They can do the self-declaration, but it's only once per year.
Mr. Chair, I have some questions, and let me preference this with one, I'm frustrated because my briefing was canceled on Monday with you. Two, I came here for an 11 o'clock meeting that happened at 10 o'clock, and no one even bothered to call me at 10:30 to say that the 11 o'clock wasn't happening. So, and three, I'm frustrated because this was a verbal report when my agenda backup, when I got my agenda backup, so I didn't have anything to work off. But now I have some questions, but I just want you to understand, I don't serve on this for the heck of it. I serve on this because I'm trying to ensure that we as a public health agency are never turning away people for services, and that we are reacting and being proactive on how we provide service in this valley. Been on here a long time. This is a new board, but I want to procedurally understand. So we didn't move forward with this item at the health district, the fee as a whole, right? So if this were, because it's available for action today, then where did the health district get cut out of it, or is it just a recommendation to the health district, or I feel like we had some unanswered questions, and yet you cancel my briefing, and then you make me show up an hour late for a meeting that I missed, and you didn't have the courtesy to call me, and now you put what I was complaining about last time on the agenda.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there.
I know, and trust me, for 2 hours I've been sitting around because I moved my schedule to accommodate this, so I am frustrated, Annette.
I understand. Let me see if I can clarify a little bit. After the board meeting, we thought that there were so many questions about the scope of the fee schedule, the scope of what HRSA was requiring. There were so many questions about the what was the discount program versus what was and how was that implemented. There was so much detail that was lacking. Since both the Community Health Center as well as the board need to understand what this process is, since they both need to understand what the HRSA documents, what the HRSA procedures and programs are, as well as the health district programs, we thought that we could keep the ball moving, so to speak, and presenting this to this board with more complete detail. Knowing that there were three members on this board that were also on the full board, if you were satisfied with the level of detail, then it would be a non-issue. Certainly, discussion is always permitted, allowed, encouraged, and both boards engage in very robust discussions. So that's never discounted. because we were having the visit, because we knew that we had FQ things that needed to be taken care of, as well as health district things, we thought this was the best way to keep this process moving forward. No disrespect to the full board at all. It's just both boards need to be working in parallel with each other. That was the concept.
Okay. Why wasn't I called at 10:30 to say that the meeting had been moved, the exit interview had been moved to 10 and not 11?
I cannot respond to that. I don't know what happened with that.
Commissioner, I notified your office at 9:30 this morning that the conference was at 10 a.m. It was to Vanessa and Gina. Vanessa and Gina, I sent them an email.
It's my problem, though. We are busy at 9:30. You want to know how many calls we were taking on coronavirus? Why couldn't someone call us as opposed to just sending an email? You get an email, Brian? We don't necessarily are in the office all the time.
So I
don't have anything on my phone, but I will handle that with Gina because
you. I didn't copy you, and then Councilman Knutson, I was under the impression that you were not going to be available for the exit conference today, and I was communicating with Scott offline as far as time changes. It was.
I'll take that up with Gina because you can imagine I called her as soon as I got here at 11, and I had there was no meeting. Right. So I'll take that up with Gina.
I think also an important note to make on that is that the site visit that we had was not our visit; it was HRSA's visit. So we had no control over their agenda. They make the agenda. They get to revise the agenda, and we actually had to go with it, so to speak. They changed their agenda, I think, 3 times whenever they got on site, from moving items around. And unfortunately, their flights, somehow their travel got kind of wompy, so they moved the item. We didn't move the item. I think that we did our due diligence. We're trying to communicate as much as possible, but
okay. Oh, trust me, I'm going to take it up with Gina, so I'm sure she'll be calling because email's not always so okay. Let me ask this. So my concern is this. So what I don't want is so go back to the person that had hypertension, that was in there for hypertension.
Do you remember what?
Yeah. So, well, I want to ask because I want to know where the pharmacy cost comes in, because now they're only paying $20 for the visit to get something. So then on top of that, they have to pay the pharmacy as well, or do we give them medications, or what do we do?
Right. So I can't speak to anything that's not in the record, and I don't want to lead anyone, you know, I don't want to give misinformation. If it's not up here for me to use as an example, I don't know what happened with this particular.
Okay, the pharmacy. Hypothetically, how would that work?
Okay, what happened with the pharmacy, first I have to make the disclaimer that the pharmacy is not yet up to date with primary care, because the pharmacy 340B status for primary care was received in January. So they have to start, getting 340B price medication for primary care. So until now, what we have in the pharmacy is mostly Ryan White HIV medications and sexual health. But hypothetically, if our pharmacy as is going to be have a proper primary care related medications, then those medications will be offered to our patients at 340B prices. So in other words, if the medication costs 50 cents through 340B, that's pretty much what we're going to charge our patients.
Okay, so, and then secondly, I know that through our audit system, we square things up to make sure that we have some type of documentation from the patient saying that they think that they should fall under this, right? So we'll see that in the audit component.
That is correct.
Okay, our finances. And then, so third, let me ask this. I know that if I owe something, I'm probably not going to go back. until I can pay that bill. So what are we doing to ensure that if this we're sending, which I don't agree with, if we're sending them a bill for 18 months, because that's the cost to us as the health district of generating that every single month, there's a cost to sending out an invoice. What are we going to do to ensure that they don't feel intimidated to not come back?
So we do have, with our administration front desk staff, they do reach out to patients that are non-compliant, because we're talking about patients not returning or doing their follow-up visits, they become non-compliant. We reach out to them to get them back in to become compliant without regard to pay. So
I understand that, but let's just say I'm a single mom with a couple kids.
Okay.
Been there before. I get the bill in the mail and I think, I'm not going back because I don't have $20. They're going to ask me to pay $10 this time. Because I can tell you what you'll say. Can you just pay something? Can you just give me something, right? So I want to ensure that people don't feel intimidated to not come back because of the pay. So within our follow-up, are we saying, although we see that there's $20 from the last time, don't worry about it. We really just need to get you in here. Is that the conversation?
We're very compassionate whenever we're making those calls. And the health of the patient is priority, not necessarily what they owe to us. So we make that the priority. Again, on those particular records, we dive a little bit deeper. There may be other resources where we can help those patients.
Mm-hmm.
Their circumstances may have changed. So we ask those questions. Is there anything that has changed? You may be eligible for something else that we have that can help you through, because circumstances change for folks, and particularly our patients, they change quite often. And so that's why we dive a little bit deeper. But we are as compassionate as possible to get those patients back in to become compliant with their health care. And again, it is not about the money whenever it comes to that.
Okay, I just don't want to forget we're a public health department.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, if I may, it's always been my experience that the language in the letters is not punitive. It's not accusatory. It's always been very much compassionate, very much encouraging to come back and catch up.
Absolutely.
And that's my experience, and I can speak.
Yeah, I just want to add that we have kind of a previous experience with the sliding fee scale and this situation with family planning, because family planning is a HRSA program as well. So we have been running that program for several years, and in that program we always have patients who had limitations to pay or had running bills, if you wish, and we always bring those patients back. So we don't have a history of actually rejecting anybody because the person owes any amount of dollars to the organization.
I have a question, Alfred. So relative to what Commissioner Kirkpatrick was saying, you've been in the FQHC environment for a long time in several states. Have you seen this be a factor to a degree in places where you've worked where people do have a reluctance to come back due to pay? Has that been something that you've noticed in other areas?
No, sir.
Okay, and I would think that it very well could be, and so I was just wondering what can we do to stay ahead of it, be creative. One thought I just had was when you do your analysis of non-compliant patients, if you do an analysis of that, if you add a component to the analysis of do they owe or do they not owe, and maybe that might be an indicator, if 61% of non-compliant patients have some outstanding balance, that would very well be an indicator that maybe there's an impact on that. So I'm throwing it out there. I think that we do need to keep that conversation and that thought at the forefront, because we don't want people to We want people to come here for services, not to come here and then not come back for reasons that we can control.
Absolutely. And I'm smiling because you were on the call. You were on the call this morning, uh-huh. And that is exactly what the financial reviewer was saying. We need to do a deeper analysis in terms of does their inability to pay affect whether or not they return as a patient. And because we don't have enough data at this point, that's why we were there. And again, that is something that we will be working towards, and those reports will be provided to this board, because we want to make sure that we're not putting any unwarranted barrier between the patient and them being able to access the health care.
Yeah, nobody benefits from that.
No one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Any questions?
No. I can also say another realm of that is, you know, I also do community work, outreach, and people that are in active addiction also tend to stray away from help, from medical attention. And so, I mean, I don't know how you focus on that, seeing as that would probably be even more limited data. But
so right now, because we are still new, we're in our infancy, our data points are lagging. As we continue to move forward and grow, we'll have more data to be able to drive the decision making. Right now, how we follow on all areas within what we are required to provide is our standards of care model.
Sure.
Chair, one thought from a compliance standpoint. I'm not familiar right now with the compliance requirements within the FQHC with HRSA, but that may be one area of opportunity for the board to think about, is at some juncture bringing in an independent group to like study how effective we are at bringing in patients and keeping patients, and any barriers that would prevent us from bringing in or keeping patients, and having that report be made to the board, so that if there is any indication that there's a challenge with how we bill or how we collect money from people, then at that point there's information that we can use to make adjustments.
Absolutely, and I would agree with that. I think that as this board moves into its strategic planning phase later in the summer, that collectively as a group, the board may want to consider that, and then also bring it back, and then we can request technical assistance resources from HRSA to possibly drive some of those efforts. But I would highly encourage the board, as you all move into your strategic planning phase later in the summer, to consider that.
Any other questions for Alfred relative to the CHC scope of services and the fee program?
No, not at this time.
And this is an action item?
Yes.
Okay. So I would entertain a motion to approve the scope of services and the fee program. Oh yes, I just want to clarify that we can bring this back to the board. Since we left it at the board last week with a lot of unanswered questions, and I think Alfred's approach today is as a result of that.
Yes.
And so we need to circle back. So if someone can include in their motion, if appropriate.
That would be fine.
I would like to include it to that this comes back to the board for a more thorough review as we just did here, and a revisit of it.
Chair, I would make a recommendation for move to approve the recommendation from staff on this fee schedule, and then that the same information, same presentation be brought back to the health district board. I would also like to incorporate in that recommendations back to the health district on how you're going to remain compliant. And even though that's part of the strategic planning, I think it's part of the conversation, compliant around what I talked about earlier is how do we make sure patients are coming back in, and the fee schedule is not scaring them away. So I think that's part of the conversation. Because that's a really long motion. Does that make sense?
Well, actually, that question is part of the quality items that HRSA required from us, and that was part of the recommendation from the visit that, for example, our current report to the board are lacking in quality-related information, and one of the items is precisely the assessment of how the our fees, sliding fee schedule or those different programs help our patient population. For example, like right now, our sliding fee schedule has, I don't know, from 0 to 125 or 126 to 175, then when we run those analyses, we actually could, can move that percentage for each of the limits to a higher level if we identify that that is a relatively large proportion of our patients who fall very close to the lower level and are paying more than they perhaps they should. So this is part of the recurrent quality analysis that we have to do. So the recommendation is valid and consistent with what to do.
So his motion was pretty clear then?
Yes.
Okay. No, it was clear with that added factor.
Mr. Chairman, Patrick,
yes, ma'am.
I'm going to support it today, but I'm not giving that same commitment for the board because I didn't have enough time to review it. But I would hope that the regular board gets more than it just being on our desk, please.
One more thing. How much access do we have through HRSA or whatever to public information output? So, I mean, what you don't know will kill you. And then people only know what they're told. So, I mean, do we have access to advertising or billboards? How do we get the information out there that just because you owe and you're on the scale that you should still come back in? I mean, does that make sense? I mean, what?
So we're currently in our ramp-up phase. There are a couple of hurdles we needed to satisfy before we went just real sure. Big with marketing and those pieces. We use whatever available resources we have to communicate to patients that, again, their healthcare is more important than anything that they owe us. And so, yeah.
So there will be ramping up into some type of advertising budget or marketing budget for...
Right, so working with marketing...
Can you speak into the mic, please?
Sure. Yeah, there will be a ramping up for advertising budget or marketing budget or some type of...
Not necessarily the budget, the activities.
Okay.
The activities. So it's a fine balance between activities and capacity. And so, again, we're playing that balance. We have to balance out because if we go hard with marketing and those particular pieces and do not have the adequate staff, that's going to cause a patient satisfaction issue. And then we're going to lose patients. Patients will not return because no one wants to wait an hour, hour and a half in a doctor's office when the average time is anywhere from 45 minutes to 55 minutes or so through the whole process, or it should be.
So we have a motion on the floor. Is there
second?
Everyone clear on the motion? What we're doing? Okay. And is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion by Mr. Knudsen, a second by Ms. Breen. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes. Item number two is to review, discuss, and approve committees and member appointments. We had a pretty good committee discussion previously, so this is just a review to make sure that everyone is clear on what committee assignments and what that entails.
Exactly.
In a brief way.
There were some committees where we've got three board members, four board members. We've got a minimum of three, a maximum of six members. And one of the requests for the bylaws is that every board member be on at least one committee. So if you want to, you should each have in your packet a document that looks like this, that identifies who is on what committee. And Mr. Chair, according to our bylaws, you are an ex officio member on every committee. So having you as a named committee member is important for the executive committee, the finance and audit, and the nominations, but you are free to come to any committee, and when you do, because of your position, you have, you won't be included in the quorum, but you will still be allowed to vote. That's pursuant to our bylaws. So if there are any changes to this, for example, on the standing committee quality and credentialing, we had one resignation. So now where we had four board members, we now only have three. So if someone else wants to volunteer for that, or if you want to voluntold them.
I'll volunteer.
So Scott, just volunteer?
I did.
Okay.
Oh, very good.
All right.
You were already on it.
Oh, well.
I have Ms. Todd, I have Mr. Garrett, and I have Mr. Melendrez.
Well, there you go. There's a free snack involved with that volunteership as well.
And if we don't add anybody today, as long as we have at least three board members, we're still in compliance with our bylaws. You can always add members at any point in time.
Okay. Are there any questions about the committee assignments?
Not at this time.
If you want to email me or email Andrea or Michelle and let us know that you want to be put on a committee, we can make sure that's agendized for the next board meeting. Okay?
Okay. All right, if there are any proposed changes at this time, we'll go ahead and entertain a motion to approve. Yes, ma'am.
May I ask a question, Annette? So normally we have odd folks on committees so that in the event of a tie, it goes. So you have two committees with four people on that are voting members. How would you break a tie in that instance?
We could flip a coin.
Well, I'm not asking to be on any committees. I'm trying to get off the health district at this point. So, but I'm just wondering, is there a protocol on how that works?
There is, and I think when we had, you may recall this, when we were stuck, I think when we were looking at the district health officer, we did cards, whoever had the highest card.
And we pulled the card?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, whatever, however the board wants to do that. But that's one reason why you want at least three members, more if you can get it, to ensure that we've got more of a robust discussion.
Yeah. All right. So I'll entertain a motion for approval of these committees as presented.
Move for approval.
Second. We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes. Number three, review, discuss, and approve committee charters.
This is in your binder also. I'm going to present a couple and... No, okay, that's fine. The first is the executive committee charter. What I did was look at what the overall scope of the committees would be. The executive committee is the right hand of the full board. Any committee can have as much responsibility as this board wants them to have. In some of the other charters, the specific duties may be bullet pointed out. They are not bullet points in the executive committee because the potential scope is so broad. They have the ability to, because this board meets once a month, the executive committee can meet as often as they want to. If there are emerging issues, they can get together and meet and discuss things and then make sure that it comes back to the full board at the monthly meeting. If there is an emergency, they can take certain action and then bring that back to the board. Executive committees often have oversight. For example, you might have oversight over the FQ process. Are we proceeding the way that we need to? You might have look at the oversight over the accreditation process. One of the issues that we were just talking about, billing and collection, even though that might be in the Finance Committee, that's also a kind of quality issue. That's an overall operational issue. So what are the operational issues that drive this organization that you want this Executive Committee to focus on? This is a beginning. This charter, once the inaugural meeting is held, you all can always tweak this. Because we've only been in existence 4 months or so, there's a lot that's still being explored. There's a lot of moving forward moments that we're going to have. This is one of those moving forward moments. So you can contemplate as a board what you want this Executive Committee to begin looking at, how you want it to begin examining the operations of the organization. All of the committees have the authority to bring in subject matter experts, should they so need to. The next committee charter is the Finance and Audit Committee charter. And as I mentioned a few moments ago, this does have bullet points in terms of what the committee will actually be looking at. All of the committees are designed to help the board fulfill its mission, help the organization fulfill its vision. The Finance and Audit Committee will do that in terms of the financial health of the organization. It will look at the audit reports, make sure that the that any findings are being appropriately responded to, that they'll take a look at the initial budgets and make sure that they make sense. They can provide guidance to the Finance Department on areas that need to be improved. And after each committee meeting, there will be a report to this full board, what was discussed, what was said, what are the next moving forward moments that, that need to occur. The next committee charter is the Nominating Committee charter. Alfred will be presenting later on today about the recruitment and retention plan, and this goes hand in hand with that plan. We have a number of requirements for this board in terms of the consumer, number of consumer members, number of members who earn their income from healthcare, community members, things like that. The nominating committee would look at all of those requirements, look at who we have on the board, and see who else we need, not just in terms of the subject matter expertise, but in terms of the actual composition of the board. Are we meeting all of our member requirements? They can assist staff in recruiting, identifying who needs to be recruited and assisting in how that recruitment moves forward. And of course, bringing the recommendations for certain recruitment to this board for review and approval. They can also make recommendations to the full board with respect to committees. We have a number of committees, standing committees. We'll have ad hoc committees. So the nominating committee can take a look at the committees that we have, the subject matter areas of expertise that we have, and make recommendations for who they think might be a good fit for a respective committee. And those are the three charters that I have. You had a quality charter, didn't you? Quality credential? Okay, all right. So that will come to you at the next, hopefully, next meeting? Okay. No problem. Okay.
Are there any questions from the board regarding these committee charters, these key committees that we've assembled?
Mr. Chair, I have a request, and this is consistent with the health district as well, and I think I mentioned it briefly to Annette. I much like the Chairwoman Kirkpatrick, I can't count the number of committees or boards that I'm on anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think there's opportunity for the health district to, if there's a staff person assigned to it, to help set the agenda, to help schedule.
Yes.
And that will make this a little bit easier. The committee charters make sense to me. The committee membership that was voted on makes sense to me. Communication before the committees has not been as consistent as I would need. I recommended joint briefings where you get two or three, not to violate the open meeting law, but a few people, so it's sensitive to your time commitments, but it helps to get information in a timely fashion so that we can make reasoned decisions when we're sitting here. I think that's true of the committees as well as the board, and I would hate to burden any staff person, but I think in the long run, more information up front before you get to votes is very helpful.
All right. Any other questions from the board? If not, I'll entertain a motion to approve these presented charters.
Motion to approve the charters as presented.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? That passes. Thank you. Item number four, receive, discuss, and approve board member recruitment, retention, and plan.
Hello again.
Alfred.
So, as Ms. Bradley just stated, that with the charters and the requirements that we have for board composition for HRSA, we developed the board recruitment and retention plan to aid as a document to aid in our efforts in doing just that. So how we recruit potential board members and then how we retain current board members to ensure that they make it through their term. The language in the document is guided by the compliance language from HRSA as it relates to composition. And the activities are very fluid. The board can determine what activities they are willing or able or wanting to participate in, and then also how we recruit. And when I say how we recruit, also at the staff level. You know, this is not a responsibility that is solely placed on the board, but we as staff also play a role in recruitment and retention of board members. Some of the activities that we have engaged in thus far with recruiting potential board members, particularly to read the composition, compliance of the patient composition is any patient that comes into the clinic and they have a complaint, I immediately meet with them and I invite them to sit on the board. As a recruitment strategy. I think that anyone that comes with a complaint, particularly around clinical flow or the services that they receive, there's value there. And I think that having that voice at this board is very important, because even though we are in the clinic every day, we do not see the operations from a patient's perspective. So having that perspective is very important. Other activities that we have engaged in are using our television screens and our informational televisions to announce that we have board openings, membership. We're doing membership drive, and where they can request information to become a member. We're gearing up for a recruitment strategy, I think, early in the summer, which is, I think, the annualized day for the board in terms of, like, recruitment. Does that ring a bell? September? Okay. So late summer with that. And then also just using our social media to announce that we have the health center and that we do have board opportunities.
So I think from the conversation that occurred earlier today under board governance, you know, it's been stated already, we're volunteers, and we all, by virtue of us being here, have commitment to the community and a lot of other things that we do in our lives. You know, I can't speak for everyone here, but, you know, I'm really, really busy. And so I agree with Councilman Knutson about communication and advanced briefings and as much information as we can get to help us be the best board members we can be, to be engaged, to be informed. You know, ongoing recruitment, I think the viability of this group of folks right here is a big tool in recruitment and retention. If we communicate with each other, if we, you know, collaborate, if we help each other with, you know, getting questions answered and things like that, then I think we're going to have a real active and effective board. And I think that's not unique to this board. I think that applies across. So any questions about, so really this is an organic fluid concept of keep our eyes open, keep the network flowing,
right.
Understanding what the commitment is to this organization, that we're volunteers, that our time is limited, and we need to really be efficient and maximize the use of our time for the betterment of our community. So,
yes, sir.
Any questions about this plan, recruitment and retention?
I just had one question. It has in there that there's a requirement of a monthly meeting. Is that a HRSA requirement, that it's monthly?
That is a requirement.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Yes.
There may be.
We can talk afterwards. Yeah. It is a requirement.
Okay.
I have a question as well.
Yes,
so yesterday, in our meeting, they said that you're required that 51% of the board be patients.
Yes, ma'am.
So how are we doing on that?
So we have, we're okay. We still have some work to do. We have some potential patients. We have some board members that have appointments to be scheduled. We're looking for more. We're also actively recruiting directly from the clinic. As I said, some of the strategies is that as a patient come in with a complaint, I automatically address their complaint, and then at the end I invite them to the board, because how better can you affect change than
do any of them come in to say something positive? Because I think that would be awesome if you could split that up and not just have the negative Nellies, but have the people who are happy that you're providing the service.
That would be great.
I know they're not as plentiful as the complainers, but...
Yeah. But we have activated our strategies, and we're very hopeful for that. Thanks.
Okay, Chairman, Alfred will continue with the next three items, 5, 6, 7.
Right.
Okay.
Did we need to appear?
No, we need to vote on number 4 to validate the retention and recruitment plan. So I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
And a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second by Ms. Todd. Motion by Councilman Knutson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? That passes. Item number 5, receive, discuss, and approve finance report.
And I apologize that this was not included. So if I can just hand this to you. I just got those today, and the individual that was going to present this section unfortunately went home sick.
Do we not have enough for everybody?
We can make copies.
We can make copies.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you move to the next item?
Okay, so what we'll do is that we will go to the monthly report or the quality management report, if there's no objections.
So do we not have this data then on a PowerPoint? This is just a hard copy?
That is the generic financial report. Typically, I would not give that report. That would be Mr. Blazer that would give that report.
Okay.
But due to unforeseen circumstances, I'm having to present it today.
Okay.
So if you don't mind, we can go to quality management.
Okay, so we're going to hold on item 5 until we get copies for everyone, and then we'll revisit it. So we'll go on to item number 6, discuss and approve quality management report.
Okay, so the quality management report is actually included into the monthly report. It's not a separate report. However, we did want to highlight the pieces that HRSA requires us to report out on quality, which going forward, as the individual
schedules know that were on the call this morning that will need to be separate, which are pretty much our clinical numbers. So our no-show rate, our collection rate for uninsured patients, our provider productivity, clients that are accessing the clinic via socioeconomic status, and then also race and ethnicity. So if we look at the monthly report and clinical by encounters, it's pretty straightforward. It's by site or service location. So family health care, family planning, sexual health, refugee, run white, pharmacy, and dental. As you can see, for the month of January, in total, we saw over 3,000 clients, so 3,035 to be exact. So those
I'm going to interrupt you. We have a question from Commissioner Kirkpatrick.
Can I ask a question just as I would expect it to be separated so that we know what dollars should be coming in for the FQHC component versus what we have? Is there been any dialogue, worst case scenario, that, I mean, because this is the big issue for the employees from day one, what happens if the FQHC numbers are much higher than our regular numbers? Does that mean positions are transferred? What does that mean? Because I will tell you that in the real world, when grants come and go here, positions change and people are moved around. So what is the expectation as these numbers? Because I could see that, right, wrong, or indifferent, whether I agree or disagree, that if we're going to, of course, want to bring them through the FQHC first, because we're already doing some of these things, whether it's HIV, whether it's some of these other things. How are you going to separate? How are you going to separate it? I'm just worried that one entity could see more patients than the other for a variety of reasons. And how do we? And this has been the $64 million question since we went down this road. How are we going to ensure that the public health folks that we have today stay and don't be necessarily become FQHC people if they don't want to? How does that work?
Well, all of the, I'm sorry, Joanne Ruhpiper, is this thing on?
No, it's on.
Just move it closer to
you. He turned it off.
Only I'm talking loud today, I think.
Director of Clinical Services. So all of the, anything to do with budgets and positions are in departments. So if there is a department that has a position open, we recruit from, say, the sexual health department recruits from the TB department. So sexual health is in the FQHC, TB is not. So it doesn't, I don't want to say it doesn't matter if it's FQHC or not, that's the funding source, but how we structure the departments, they're all according to program and department. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I get that, but so let me ask it a different way. So my thing is this. Say I walk in and I want to have lab work. Never been here before, never done that. And let's just say I want to have HIV lab work done, right? So in today's environment, I would come into clinical services and it would fall under maybe the Ryan White, or it would fall under something else, which is fine. But if I come in today, now that the FQHC has been established, am I billed under the Ryan White FQHC dollars? Am I billed under the regular? Because I just could see where the numbers could look really low for regular epidemiology division, right? Because now we're running through an FQHC, and that's really... I mean, we look at it. So let me use one that's painful to me, Joanne, so you understand. So let's just take the healthy babies, right? Because, you know, that one's painful to me, right? So 89 versus 11. So 89, we did away with a big portion of it because it just didn't justify enough for us to get the grant, right? So now we're doing it with just the 11, but we also lost positions on it. So how will that not happen? with the FQHC, especially when we're dividing out our numbers specifically, as was expected, right?
Well, many of the staff are funded through different sources. So if there is a grant that we lose, then whoever the staff is in that grant would potentially lose their funding, so we would not have that position, and then we would have to go into some type of moving staff around so that we could keep them. For FQHC, we have $650,000 in salary for positions to support the FQHC, but that's only a portion of what is considered in the whole umbrella of FQHC, because it has different clinics. So it's the sexual health clinic, family planning, primary care, refugee health. So not everybody is funded by FQHC.
Okay,
so I think
let me take this on, and you continue. Okay, the FQHC, the way that we have a structure is, actually we have taken the whole program together. Mm-hmm. So for example, the sexual health clinic, whatever it was at the sexual health clinic yesterday, that's what it is today at the FQHC, regardless of funding source. Ryan White program, the same.
Alfred just said, which rightfully so, the FQHC is asking us to separate the patients. So can you address that?
Yeah.
I mean, rightfully so, because they want to know how many people we're seeing.
Right, but at the FQHC, the first thing is about employees and services. We didn't break down any of the services or clinics we have yesterday. Those are the same clinics that we have yesterday. All of them are included with the services and staff into the FQHC. Now, the next, what we are doing is, instead of having three, four different isolated clinics here, like you have the sexual health clinic there, and family planning on the other side, and the small primary care clinic in this side, we restructured that service, and now we have one unit, I would say, a mission point for our patients, and from there the patients are diverted to the different services, with the concept that we are just one clinic as opposed to being three or four clinics. Now, when it comes to the service, patients who come here for HIV Ryan White services, they are still receiving that Ryan White HIV service, and that service is also still being reported as Ryan White HIV service. But the clinic itself, the flow, the structure has been reconfigured into one unique flow.
I think the question that you're asking is about sustainability and how do we ensure that positions are not cut, and how do we ensure that we keep the integrity of public health service. I think that's what you're asking. With the FQHC and with that and moving towards the one clinic concept and what we have described to HRSA of how it will look, is that the program does receive the operational grant, which was $650,000, that has now grown to $900,000, as of yesterday. And so that is the operational grant. However, the reason it is the reason and one of the benefits of being an FQHC is the program income that allows us to sustain the program and to actually backfill or have those resources move over to our general fund to sustain positions. And it doesn't matter if it's under the FQHC, it doesn't matter if it's an enabling system.
services, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where it falls within the health department, as long as it is under the umbrella of the catchment, so to speak. And so I think that is the question that you were asking, is sustainability, and how do we ensure that we keep that promise of public health? So, and that is how we do it, because that is the, I mean, the program income that this program affords us allows us to do that.
I think one more, and correct me if I'm wrong, Marilyn, but I think one more aspect of what she was saying is to not compete internally and or cannibalize. And I think the answer to that is, really, we already had all of these services in place, with the exception of some things that we are expanding in relationship to FQHC, right, such as mental health and things like that, that are on the horizon. But we already had these things in place, staffed by employees that were funded by various sources. What we've done, or what we're in the process of doing, is doing a FQHC is nothing more than a federal government structured overlay that's laying over the top of and adding a layer of cohesiveness to the entire operation. But it's not FQHC or this, FQHC or this, it's right. FQHC is all of that. Is that
right? That is correct.
So it's an overlay, a structural overlay to our operation that, right, we already had, with the intent to make it more robust, right, make it more expansive, to serve more people at more levels, at various levels of medical need, not just their specific family planning and or sexual health and or whatever they came here for. That's the idea, and do it at an enhanced level with that reimbursement component back in to perpetuate the program moving forward.
Exactly.
But staffing is an issue, and we need to be cognizant of that at all times, making sure that we're not, one area is not suffering to make this viability occur with FQHC. We certainly have to be cognizant of that, and I think that's a concern as well.
So. Right. So, 2 points. The only two areas that do not fall under the FQHC, that umbrella, is immunizations and TB.
That are in clinical services currently.
Right.
And community health.
Those two.
And community health nurses.
Okay.
Right.
They're outside of it.
Right. And the reason why they're out is that they fall into a different jurisdiction under the PHS, the Public Health Service. So where it's different for those particular areas to fit well,
yeah,
in the FQHC world. I do want to speak to your point, and then I guess we can kind of move on, is that I don't think that it's anyone's goal, or I hope not, that within the health district and the CHC that any department, any division suffers on the back of another, so to speak. So I look at us as one agency, one team, and we're here to support each division and even each other as colleagues to make sure that we are meeting the goals of why we exist. So,
okay.
And I'll also speak to it a bit, because I did talk about this at our last labor management meeting, and this issue came up. And public health, as particular to nurses and to clinical areas, has traditionally been the immunization, home visiting, and TB. And I am now director of clinical services of that group, and Alfred has FQHC. And so that has always been that's my experience and my expertise, is those three areas. So I just want the board to be assured that that is in my purview, and that's what I plan to do, is to move that forward and improve those services. So I don't see us getting rid of public health at all. Especially, I mean, that's, and I've discussed that with the labor, and we're as thin as we can be with staffing, and I can't see how we would eliminate that to provide. No, you're not taking my positions, okay?
So, oh no.
So we got that clear.
Any other questions? Does that complete the quality management report?
It does. I mean, the numbers are the numbers. Going forward, the report will be separated out because, again, as one of the conditions that we received this morning from HRSA, is that the board really needs to see the numbers broken out and then also the financial pieces that come along with that. That speaks to some of that analysis that we spoke of earlier, like collection rate. Is it a barrier for individuals for return visits and all of that?
Yes. With time and patient encounters comes data that we can therefore analyze and extract where we need to go.
Exactly.
Right now we're thin on the data side.
We're getting there.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
Right.
Yep.
And the quality management committee has had their own teams, just like you have your little subcommittees. And so we have peer review, patient utilization, patient satisfaction, and there's four. So.
And that's a staff level function?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Okay.
So the staff is going to be collecting data, analyzing it, doing some projects, and so we'll be that's going to be part of your report. Okay. So that's the job of that committee.
Okay.
Right. And that covers quality.
Okay,
and
quality. With that, I'll entertain a motion for item number 6 to receive the discussion and approve the quality management report.
So moved.
Yeah, we'll support that motion.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
That passes. Do you want to go back to item 5 or go to 7 and then finish with 5?
5 is fine.
Okay. Yep. All right. Item 5, receive, discuss, and approve the finance report. Yep. Everyone should have a fresh, warm copy.
Yes. So this is our finance report for the month of January. And as we stated, it's a very small generic finance report because right now the FQ only supports salary, some small supplies, and then some contract efforts. So there's not much that is expensed out in other areas within the contract. You can see that we did do a drawdown in January of $102,245.57 from the overall $650. And so that is at your face sheet for that. And then you can see the detailed report on the back of that.
Mr. Chairman,
yes, ma'am.
In the future, is this going to be like noticed properly when the agenda comes, or what? I'm feeling frustrated. So,
I understand.
What's the process? Because I don't get it at this point.
Your financial report will be with your full board packet going forward.
Any questions regarding this printout that you received?
I have what might be a dumb question, but why under the budget is everything a zero? And then there's an actual that's more than, I mean, there is no budget, but there's an actual. How does that work?
Keep the budget. Go for it.
Is this on? Members of the board, distinguished guests, Robert Anderson for the record. I'm a consultant in accounting and finance. I've worked with the finance department to help get ready for the FQHC site visits and also on other projects. The reason that the budget says zero on that report is it wasn't submitted in time for the full budget process. And so that reflects essentially it being outside of the scope of the regular budget. Because of the date, it was submitted after the original budget was submitted to the full board for the district in, I believe, March. It was submitted after that, and then it was approved in, I believe, September timeframe. That's the reason that it says zero.
We can have that corrected for the February meeting.
Yeah,
March.
It just seems a little
what
strange.
What month is it?
So
March.
The grant pays for personnel, right? So I just,
yes.
So I understand what you're saying, that because it's not part of the health district budget, because it wasn't created in time to be part of the health district budget, but if we could just see the amounts that are budgeted for those, you know, for how much the grant says you can spend on each, and then what the actual is, because it really is, it's kind of simple other than that, so.
I can definitely circle back with finance to ensure that we have a more robust and comprehensive full financial report going forward. Again, I am kind of winging it with the financial piece today, and so please bear with me, but I will make sure that there's a full robust financial report going forward.
So I have a question. I'm not sure who to direct it to, but okay. Finance guy. Mr. Anderson?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes.
So what mechanism do we need to put in place and when to actually ratify a budget as the FQHC so we can spend the money? I mean, if we've done that, it's my...
Yeah, I think that's already been done.
I believe it's in the... It's
in December?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In December or November, Dennis brought the...
I'm sorry.
I believe in December, or Ernest brought the budget when he brought the $650,000 plus the money allocated for sexual health, Ryan White, and the different components there.
One thing we, and again, but we have to understanding that you're, you know, just kind of winging it, like you said, because of Mr. Blaser not being here, is that the case? Okay. I think that next meeting we need to have a thorough, almost a reboot, a start over, a history lesson of where the financial aspects are. They need to be nailed down very, very thoroughly so we don't have, so we have answers instead of zeros. Marilyn has a question.
Well, I mean, and this one's to you, Dr. Lagun, because we did have that board discussion, and the budget should have been augmented to showcase this, but I don't ever remember, what I remember you seeing is we got $650,000, today I learned we got $250,000 more. And nothing was going to change as far as personnel, but there was never a certified budget with different line items, different departments, how we bill all that, that came before us that you would at some point have to do to be in compliance with state law. So I think that's what we're asking for. Where is that piece of paper that breaks it down to what those salaries are, which goes back to my previous point in the last, to ensure that we're not taking out of one coffer to put into the other, and that there's separate boards running each, and that each board knows what the other board's doing. So I'm just saying, I remember the pie chart,
because
you gave
correct.
Me a pie chart, and you said, that's when I asked all the questions, where, how did we get to 650 when we had 150 when, you know, we started, right? So to Ms. Breen's point, I don't think this board in particular has approved any budget or expectation on what. I've been to every one of these meetings. I don't remember seeing a piece of paper broken down by, we'll need two people under the Ryan White. We'll need two people under this. So to Ms. Breen's point, in the government standards, we're not meeting them, in my opinion, right now. Just so you know.
No, yeah, that's correct.
Okay,
that's correct.
But we're able, to do that,
yeah.
For,
yeah, we have that
for our March meeting with thorough briefings in advance.
Absolutely.
So we can have clear discussions about it. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. So, anybody excited to approve this warm piece of paper? I'd like to actually just receive this as a discussion and not an actionable item, because really we don't have anything concrete to...
Until we get the full detail report, can we hold on?
That's what I would like to do. So we have a motion by Jose to, what would be the correct terminology?
Just receive the report.
Receive the report and...
pending, approval pending presentation and...
At the March meeting.
At the March meeting.
Okay. All right, so is that okay, motion, Jose? Anyone want to second Jose's motion? We have a motion by Jose and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
You opposed? All right, and lastly, the monthly report.
It is the monthly narrative report. I don't feel that I, you know, should or have to read it to everyone unless you want me to. But it is the narrative report. It just says some of the major activities that we have done in each of the sections in the division. If you have any questions, we can definitely entertain those.
Any questions regarding the monthly report? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion to accept it.
So moved.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let's see. Board reports, number 7. Any items that need to be brought forward from the board that you'd like to discuss or put on the future agendas for discussion? Anything down the row? No? Okay. We'll close item number 7 and item number 8, health officer and staff reports. Anything to report?
Okay. Thank you. Yes. Well, first I want to say that today was the last day of the 3 days operational site visit from HRSA. And it was I would say a very satisfying visit. We received the final recommendations or comments this morning, and unfortunately, Commissioner Kirkpatrick and Councilman Canosin weren't able to attend for reason that were already mentioned, but
salt in that wound, Mr. Ligon, because we both moved our schedule having
if I made it 2 points.
So
there's possibly is no bad guy here, there's no boogeyman in the closet. This is all the board and the committee's working together to improve the situation or enhance it now that HRSA is over with and all that. So yeah, instead of looking at what's being taken away, let's try to look at what's being added, what can be added, and the cooperation that's involved, I think, is important for both sides. Yeah. And that there is no, there is no boogeyman in the closet. Let's just restate that. You know, we're all trying to work together for the same common goal, my feeling.
Okay, so again, the results of the visit, we consider that were very positive to us when we look back at the outcome of the first technical assistance visit we received in November. We have a lot of recommendations and concerns. The reviewers this time, they identified a number of things that we need to address, and according to the report and comments, most of those things are related to language on some documents that we need to review and update and frame according to HRSA requirements, and some other that need a minor twist that most likely we should be able to address before the 14 days after receiving the official report. So our expectation is that by the time that HRSA submit the final report for this visit, we should have cleaned most of the items that they share with us today. So, and that's the direction that we'll be working now.
Mr. Chair, my request would
yes,
be
sir.
In the last site visit, I know there was a number of findings that I never really received a report until I had to ask for it. So I think now I would like to ask for that, for whatever the summary is of their visit over the last 3 days, if that can be sent to the full board so that we're informed about what's going well, what's not going well from their perspective, that would be useful.
Right. Well, we don't have any written report from them yet. It was just the note from the meeting today, but Alfred could create some kind of, I would say, draft, a really gross draft.
A memo that just says, here's kind of what's going on. That would be nice.
Right, with the main.
To that point, I think, like, for example, I know your team was taking detailed notes from what they were reporting back today.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe what was handed out today, just the notes to go with that. And then once the report does come from her, so we would then have the full report. That way people get it kind of, because I know just sitting in today, I kind of got a gist of what they were talking about.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, we were good in most areas, but language mm-hmm. and some documentation were some the pieces that were missing. So I think if you could just have the notes written up from today's
Absolutely.
Findings, and then yeah, exactly. when the full report does come out, we can have that.
Yeah, we will send you that.
Because there was a document. Because I was on the phone. I was curious if I could get...
No, but okay.
those checkpoints.
No, right. Section. No, yeah. I mean, this document is just a checklist of right. all the items
that
to discuss.
Yeah.
So, no, but it has nothing here. It's just like, okay, now we are going to talk about this item A1, for example.
Yeah.
So, the document itself wouldn't give you anything because there is nothing in terms of report in this document. This was the guidance of how they were presenting today. Now, what I'm saying is, I will ask Alfred to share with you his notes on the items that are more important for us, I would say, so you can have that.
Could we not get a full transcript of the
yeah
of it this morning, of what we experienced this morning, what we heard this morning? That, right, that's what we're saying.
The exit conference, to my knowledge, wasn't recorded. There was numerous staff there, and we were independently taking notes. I think that's what Dr. Ligon is referring to. He can have Alfred compile
a summary of the exit conference and
right.
share that with us.
That would be a good place to start. And once the report does come back,
right.
we need to have a better understanding of
yeah,
it.
Absolutely.
So
something to go on now, because even though they have X amount of days to give us the formal report, and that starts the clock ticking for the 14-day correction period, we can correct a lot of things starting today. We probably already have. I mean, some people might have already gone to work today as a result of the exit conference. So for us to know what those things are and what those preliminary action steps are, because it's very predictive. Based on what they told us today, there's no
yes.
secrets.
Yes.
Right? We just don't have the formal version. So yeah, if you could get us a pretty straightforward summary of the action steps and where we're deficient, and is that something that could be emailed
yeah.
to
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
us? Okay. I think that would be excellent.
I apologize. So. I have to step out. I have to.
Okay. Thank you.
Kid Jody today.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
No worries.
First day.
Yes. If the board can give me a couple of days to organize it.
Oh, certainly. No, that would be great.
Get it out to everyone.
Okay.
Please.
Thank you, Jose.
We want Hell Week to continue, Alfred.
Yeah, right.
yeah, that
was I said, we want Hell Week to continue.
right. Thank you.
Okay, so the other thing I wanted to say is that March 18 will be the annual county health rankings. We don't have yet a venue where to do that because that day there is a large environmental health related meeting here with a lot of community partners. So we are looking for another facility to house that event. Again, that would be March 18, and everybody here is invited for that. That's the county health rankings, and that's a national event. So we will do that simultaneously with the people from North Nevada. The other thing is the coronavirus, and perhaps you might have seen the news, the recent communications coming out of the CDC and through multiple news agencies talking about, you know, kind of a imminent risk for this disease to be locally transmitted in the United States. And perhaps one of the reasons for this kind of communication is that there was a case in Northern California that was reported yesterday as a result of a local transmission of coronavirus, where there is no evidence of either travel to China or being in close contact with a patient diagnosed with that disease already. So that's, that person will be the first locally transmitted coronavirus in the United States. So because of that, the CDC just changing its, you know, its public communication. We are planning a meeting tomorrow with first responders and other community partners here. And our intention tomorrow is to discuss our response to coronavirus in the county, the resources that are available and needs that that we have as a community, and also you know, what are we doing right now. So this is something that is going to happen.
What time is that meeting? I'm just curious.
We start at 8:30 a.m. here in this room. Yeah. Yeah. The other thing is just related to the influenza season. It's as we know, we having more than 1,000 hospital admissions because of influenza. It's almost twice as many as at the same period last year. We have 24 influenza related deaths until last week. And that's very similar to what happened a year ago, but in terms of severity, it seems to be a mildly more severe season this year than last year based on the number of hospital admissions that we are having so far. I will stop here.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Legan. Go ahead and go to our second public comment. Anyone would like to stand and speak? Seeing none, we'll close public comment, and this meeting is adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.